Hi, friends, and welcome to Reading Jewish History in the Parsha, where each week we share an idea in the Parsha and how it relates to Jewish history, along with all the books and articles I've read over Shabbos to learn more about it. Reminder to sign up for our weekly Substack. Pause. What is Substack? One of my friends who listens to this every single week asked me, he said, what on earth is a Substack? You mentioned at the beginning of every single episode. So just give me 30 seconds. Substack is a social media platform where you can share essays. Just think about it. Signing up for Reading Jewish History in the Parsha.substack.com. It's not scary. It just lets you get the write-up of this class directly to your email box. So if you've never heard of the term Substack before, that is totally fine. But it's an automatic way where the write-ups for this that I do every week that has the links to all the books and all the articles and has some extra pictures and historical documents, you'll get it directly into your inbox every single week. But don't beat yourself up if you've never heard of Substack. You don't need to understand it in order to sign up for it. And once again, you can sign up for Reading Jewish History in the Parsha.substack.com. Thank you so much to our sponsors and friends, Jana and Lior Hoden family, with immense gratitude to Hashem. It's always curious what Parsha ideas stay with you from your childhood. One of the earliest ideas I heard, probably, I'm guessing fourth grade, fifth grade, still not sure why this has become like an elementary school Rebbe favorite, where your kids are going to take home this idea in their Parsha sheets, is that Parshas Tetzaveh is the only Parsha since the introduction of Moshe Rabbeinu that does not contain his name. Well, sort of. Sefer Devarim is spoken by Moshe in first person, so there are Parshio there where he is absent as well. But still, this fact, which my Rebbe taught me probably 30 years ago, has always stayed with me. And maybe it's because I learned this when I was so young that I never really explored why this makes any sense. The reason why Moshe's name does not appear, as my Rebbe explained, is because Moshe, during the Chet HaEgel, the sin of the golden calf, asked God to erase his name from the Torah if God does not forgive the Jewish people. Mecheni na mesifrecha asher kasavta, Moshe tells God, erase me from your book. It is because of this statement, explains not only my Rebbe, but the Baal HaTurim in the introduction to Parshas Tetzaveh, that Moshe's name is missing from our Parsha. But this leaves me with even more questions. Is Moshe being punished for his willingness to sacrifice his own legacy on behalf of the Jewish people? Just because he said these words, why is his name being erased? It's not what Moshe wanted. At the end, the Jewish people were forgiven. He was trying to help the Jewish people to preserve our collective legacy. And secondly, even more strange, why this Parsha? Even if his name could have been erased, why specifically Parshas Tetzaveh, which actually comes before Parshas Kisisa, when he actually says the word, Mecheni na misifrecha, erase me from your book? It seems pretty arbitrary that this is the Parsha where we commemorate and erase Moshe's name. And yes, there are some very clever allusions, explaining that Moshe's name really is in the Parsha. The Ben Ishchai writes that Moshe's plea to be erased from the Torah, Mesifrecha, when he says Mecheni na Mesifrecha, should be read as Mesefer Chaf, the letter Chaf, which numerically is the 20th, is the number 20. So erase me from, this is how the Ben Ishchai reads it, the 20th Parsha in the Torah, namely Parshas Tetzaveh. If you count up from the beginning of Bereishis, we're at the 20th Parsha. There are other more intricate uses of Gematria that find allusions for Moshe's name as well. The Vilna Gaon is quoted as saying and explaining that if you spell out each letter of Moshe's name, spell out the letter Mem, Shin, Hey, the letters not represented, right? If you spell out the letter Mem, it is two words, Mem and then a Mem Sofif. You spell out the letter Shin, it is Shin, Yud, Nun. So if you take that Mem Sofif and that Yud and the Nun and the Aleph that comes after spelling the letter Hey at Bimilua, like spelling out the letter completely, take out all the letters that do not appear in Moshe's name, they equal 101, which is the same amount of verses of Psukim in Parshas Tetzaveh. It's a long stretch. Both are very nice allusions, extraordinarily clever, but neither fully explain the significance of Moshe's absence from our Parsha in particular. To understand Moshe's leadership and the relationship to this Parsha, let's explore the leadership of one of the great leaders, particularly during the time of one of the darkest times of the Jewish people, namely Rav Chaim Ozer Grzinski. Rav Chaim Ozer Grzinski, who was born in 1863, died in 1940, was one of the most universally recognized leaders of the Jewish people. Even among other greats, he was distinguished for his leadership, particularly in times of crisis, leading much of the efforts to save European Jewry from the Holocaust. His early life, however, was really steeped in Torah study. Reb Chaim Ozer was distinguished as a Torah genius from a very young age. At his bar mitzvah, he reportedly regaled the audience by being able to finish any line from the dense commentary known as the Ketzos HaChoshen that anyone mentioned. You say a line, I'll finish it. Honestly, these stories never did much for me. There have been many geniuses throughout Jewish history, and that is not, in my opinion, why certain rabbinic personalities are preserved more than others. What distinguished Rav Chaim Ozer undoubtedly was that his Torah genius was combined with compassionate leadership for the Jewish people. There have been several biographies and articles written about his life, though I think the best are Rav David Kamenetsky's Hebrew work, which is called Rabban Shel Kol B'nei Hagola. There's only the first volume that is out now, which focuses on his early life. A shorter but excellent overview of his life was also written by our favorite, Rabbi Aaron Rakefet, who has a work that is a little hard to find, but you should get it in a used bookstore. It is a fantastic work. He's got, I think, two volumes. He may have published a third. I for sure have two volumes. It's called Rakafot Aaron, and it's in English, and it has a lot of these short little biographies of figures that haven't been given a strong biographical treatment. And in Rakefet's book, Volume 1 of Rakefet Aaron, he has a wonderful overview of Rav Chaim Ozer's life. There's a subtle irony writing history about Rav Chaim Ozer's life, since he himself, in his approbation to Rav Yehuda Lifshitz's historical work, Dor Yesharim, expressed hesitance with the study of history. At the time, in the early 1900s, really for the first time in almost all of Jewish history, Jews began writing works, from Jews, began writing works of Jewish history, mostly to combat the history that had been written by Gratz and other non-traditional academic scholars. Rav Chaim Ozer writes in his introduction to this work of Jewish history as follows. The translation, I need to thank my friend, Rabbi Jonah Steinmetz from the Los Angeles Kollel, who wrote a wonderful review of Rav David Kamenetsky's book on the Sfarim blog and has some really nice translations. He's a wonderful writer, scholar, Talmud Chacham, translator, but I took a few of his translations from his article. They're wonderful. This is his introduction to the Dor Yesharim, where Rav Chaim Ozer writes hesitance about writing Jewish history, because for much of Jewish history, we didn't write history of our own. That is the subject of Yosef Chaim Yerushalmi's book, Zachor. He taught Jewish studies at Columbia, and he wrote an entire book exploring why do Jews not focus on Jewish history. I'm sure in a later reading Jewish history in the Parsha, we will explore that more. But in Rav Chaim Ozer's introduction to this work of Jewish history, he writes as follows. Historically, Gedolei Torah, Torah leaders, never devoted their minds to delving into Jewish history or even to write books about Jewish sages of past generations. The words of our ancient and later rabbis are alive and maintained in the mouths of those who learn Torah. Every study hall is brimming with rabbis and their students studying a living Torah as if the words were taught that day. There's no need to memorialize tzaddikim, the righteous, as their words are their legacy. However, since the decline of Judaism in Europe during the time of the Reform, there is no Torah and there's no more fear of God. As such, the remaining authors devoted themselves to memorialize the great figures and occurrences of past generations. Some of them intended to endear the wisdom of Israel and its leaders to this generation. If they don't receive this through knowledge, recognition, and vision, meaning through studying Torah, at least they should receive it through hearing stories from Jewish history, that they had outstanding ancestors through which they claim honor. Rav Chaim Ozer expressed similar ambivalence to the study of Jewish history. This is a fantastic letter. Rav Chaim Ozer has collected letters. I love reading rabbinic correspondence. It's my favorite genre of rabbinic writing. I actually wrote many years ago an article about the rabbinic correspondence of Rav Huttner, another figure who I'm sure we'll explore a different time. One of the most fascinating collections of rabbinic correspondence that exists are the Igros, the letters of Rav Chaim Ozer. It's two volumes. I have one in my house. I actually also have a PDF of them, which I can include in the Substack. They're absolutely phenomenal and really jaw-dropping, where you see the humanity and the personality of a lot of these larger-than-life figures. And Rav Chaim Ozer has another letter where he was approached by a group of American rabbis. I really love this letter. Who wanted to know if it was appropriate to participate in the celebrations of the Rambam's 800th birthday. And Rav Chaim Ozer responded that such celebrations are a little strange. The Rambam, he writes, continues to live within the mouths of Rabbanim and their students. Reminds me of a different story that when Rav Sal Soloveitchik was approached about these birthdays and said, we're celebrating, you know, the Rambam's 800th birthday. He's passed away now and we want to have this celebration. Reb Soloveitchik responded, this is the first I am hearing that the Rambam is dead. Meaning like he still lives on in the Beis Medrash. That's how we preserve Jewish memory. Rav Chaim Ozer did not have an easy life. His first engagement to the daughter of Rav Eliyahu Feinstein of Prizhin was broken off. Rav Eliyahu Feinstein, a very important figure in his own right, was actually Rav Moshe Feinstein's uncle and also the father-in-law of Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, which is how Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rabbi Soloveitchik, Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, I believe were first cousins, maybe first cousins once removed. It's not entirely clear why the first shidduch was abandoned, though it seemingly weighed heavily on Rav Chaim Ozer throughout his life. The woman he was supposed to marry ended up marrying Rav Menachem Krakowski, who was later selected by Rav Chaim Ozer to sit together with him on the Vilna Beis Din. Rav Chaim Ozer ended up marrying the granddaughter of Rav Yisrael Salanter, the founder of the Musar movement. Sadly, the only child from the marriage predeceased him and did not have any children of her own. So really, that line of Rav Chaim Ozer ended with him, sadly. Following the death of Rav Yitzchak Chanan Spector in 1896, who was like the previous leader of the Jewish people, Rav Chaim Ozer gradually moved into the center of leadership within the Jewish community. He was never formally appointed the chief rabbi of Vilna in deference to an old custom of not having a formal chief rabbi in the town of Vilna. The Vilna Gaon also was not the chief rabbi of Vilna. Even after a different rabbi, Rabbi Rubenstein, was appointed to the formal government position, and this caused a whole hullabaloo, if you'll allow me to use that word, Rav Chaim Ozer remained the center of gravity of Vilna and gradually really for all of world Jewry. This dispute between Rav Chaim Ozer and Rav Rubenstein created a wedge in the community and was later the inspiration for a novel by Chaim Grada called Rabbis and Wives. You can check out that book. It's a classic. I believe it's been translated from the original Yiddish. Rav Chaim Ozer's leadership was global and local. The highest level of scholarship along with deep empathy and concern for the Jewish people. In one moving story recounted by Rabbi Rakefet, a young couple approached Rav Chaim Ozer for a blessing before their wedding and mentioned in passing that they don't have any family. They don't have any family nearby and they wanted this blessing. Rav Chaim Ozer, knowing the Kala didn't have anyone to teach her the laws of Nida, family purity, immediately offered to teach her these laws himself, the Gadol Hadar. Do not be ashamed, Rav Chaim Ozer told her, that you don't know these laws. They are the basis of Jewish family life, but you don't have a family nearby to teach you, so I will. And they had a whole room of people waiting to have these global questions answered by Rav Chaim Ozer, and he sat down to teach Kala classes to this person who didn't have any family nearby who could teach them to her. He also led global movements. He was instrumental in the founding of Agudas Yisrael and coordinated aid efforts during World War I, and in 1924, along with the Chafetz Chaim, established the Vad HaYeshivas, providing financial support for Torah students throughout Europe. I'm very grateful for my friend Davi Safir, who sent me a few of the like original documents. I have them included in the Substack, but you can see in their telegrams, they are signed. Here's one that I have in the email that is pleading to stop the danger that is threatening their whole existence. There are a lot of misspellings. It's a telegram, but it is signed Chafetz Chaim and Rabbi Grzynski. They used to sign letters together. The Chafetz Chaim and Reb Chaim Ozer were like partners in this. There was an ad taken out. It's fascinating. Big letters. Famous Gaonim appeal to British Jewry. Urgent call by the Chafetz Chaim and Rabbi Chaim Ozer Grzynski of Vilna. And they signed this letter where they're writing, the terrible position of our unfortunate and suffering brethren in Russia is known to everyone. And they are writing to raise money and appeal to worldwide Jewry to help support the plight of Jews in Europe and Russia and all over the world. Nothing, however, could prepare world Jewry for the horrors to come. In 1932, a year before the formal rise of Nazi Germany, Rav Chaim Ozer was already overwhelmed and somewhat concerned about what the future had in store for European Jewry. He wrote the following letter. This is in volume 1, number 20. I cite where they are because the original Hebrew is so much more beautiful, even though the translations by Rabbi Steinmetz are really fantastic. And he wrote to his nephews as follows. Thank God we and our family are well. However, there is no shortage of burdens and aggravation. There's a decline in the physical and spiritual condition causing many people to come to discuss and pour their bitter hearts out. It is upon me to listen to their sighs all day. The institutions are on the verge of closure. They hang on nothingness. The Ramless Yeshiva, which is my load, has no foundation or basis, and the future is covered in fog. In 1939, Hitler invaded Poland, and yeshiva students throughout Europe found refuge in Vilna. Reb Chaim Ozer made sure each of the Torah students were cared for and directed each synagogue in Vilna to care for these yeshiva students. So many Talmidim had come to Vilna for refuge that the Lithuanian government asked Reb Chaim Ozer to coordinate places for them in other parts of the country, which he agreed to do. As Bentzion Klebanski painstakingly details in his incredible work called The Golden Age of Lithuanian Yeshivas, an academic work about that interwar years between World War I and World War II, where all the yeshivas were upside down, running around. It's a phenomenal book and just a jaw-dropping slice of Jewish history done on the highest academic levels. The research he did is jaw-dropping. And he writes that towns sent emissaries to Vilna and vied to host yeshiva students, which is so moving. People are stepping forth, we'll take them, we'll take them. The towns fought among themselves for whom would have the privilege of hosting the yeshivas that were then crowded in Vilna. As the situation in Europe began to deteriorate rapidly, so did the health of Reb Chaim Ozer, who placed the burden of coordinating all of the war efforts on his shoulders. He was in touch with rabbis throughout the world, including in the United States, most notably Rabbi Leo Young and Rabbi Eliezer Silver. Throughout this time, Reb Chaim Ozer did not stop answering halachic questions. The final volume of his responsa, which are known as Achiezer, was published in 1939. The haunting introduction addresses why Torah should even be published during a time of such crisis. This is an introduction I've come back to many times. I've read it many times. I find it so moving. Allow me to read the Hebrew, and then, of course, we will translate. He writes in the beginning there, Ha'im shas cherem kezos mechuvana lohotzi svarim lo'or olam. Halo yishol ha'shoel am Yisrael toveya b'yam shel dima'os v'atem omrim shira. He begins the introduction, is a time of crisis an appropriate time to be publishing Torah? Shouldn't we be asking, the Jewish people are drowning in a sea of tears and you're singing and sharing Torah? Yet he says, Ulam zekoach Yisrael saba lelokav ulotorah so. This is the power of the Jewish people. Gam kishe cheriv chada haisa munachas al tzavaro Torah Hashem haisa shashuav b'chol yom. Even when we have a sword pressing against our neck, Torah remains a delight every single day. Rav Chaim Ozer passed away on the 5th of Av, Friday, August 9th, 1940. The spiritual father of the migrating yeshiva, to borrow Klebanski's description, were devastated. Trucks were rented to bring neighboring yeshiva students back to Vilna in time for the funeral. American Jewry was devastated as well. Rav Chaim Ozer had been in touch constantly with American rabbis to coordinate the war efforts. Agudas Yisrael, the organization that Rav Chaim Ozer helped found, organized a memorial service, led at the time by Rabbi Eliezer Silver, whose great-great-grandson Rafi, shout out to Rafi, is in my class. Rabbi Soloveitchik was invited by Rabbi Eliezer Silver to deliver the eulogy in the United States. He knew Rav Chaim Ozer from his time in Berlin. They would spend time talking and Torah learning together. Had Rav Chaim Ozer married Rav Elio Feinstein's daughter, they actually would have been family. Rabbi Soloveitchik's remarks turned to our parsha, Tetzava, and its description of the unique vestments of the Kohen Gadol, namely the tzitz and the choshen. The tzitz, Rabbi Soloveitchik explained, is worn on the head of the Kohen Gadol, representing Torah scholarship. The choshen, with the names of the 12 tribes carved onto it, covered the heart of the Kohen Gadol, representing compassion and connection to the entirety of the Jewish people. True leadership, Rabbi Soloveitchik explained, must encompass both the choshen and the tzitz, both the mind and the heart. And that was Rav Chaim Ozer, who possessed both the head and heart to lead the Jewish people during one of the darkest periods in all of Jewish history. Interestingly, as far as I know, the eulogy was never fully translated into English. It was, however, summarized in English in a May 1992 article of, you guessed it, our favorite, The Jewish Observer, the magazine of Agudas Yisrael, where in their issue marking the 70th anniversary of Agudas Yisrael, the organization that Rav Chaim Chaim Ozer helped found, quoted in English, this eulogy given by Rabbi Soloveitchik. And that brings us back to our original question on this week's Parsha. Moshe pleads with God to forgive the Jewish people after the sin of the golden calf. Erase me from your book, Moshe cries. Moshe is not willing to continue his leadership without the Jewish people. Like Reb Chaim Ozer, in times of pain and crisis, he refused to leave the side of his people. So Hashem removes his explicit name from the Parsha and includes it implicitly in Parsha's Tetzaveh. Instead, his name is alluded to through Gematria and other allusions. This is the ultimate form of leadership, the very subject of our Parsha, which discusses the Kohen Gadol. The highest form of leadership is when the legacy and vision of leaders remains present, even when they are not explicitly there. It is the unbreakable bond, as the Lubavitcher Rebbe once wrote in one of his sichos, between the Jewish people and their leader Moshe, that even when he is not explicitly present, he can still be found. And it is that leadership embodied by Moshe and the leaders of the generation, like Rav Chaim Ozer, that continue to steward the hearts and minds of the Jewish people. Even in their explicit absence, we remain connected. So thank you again for listening to Reading Jewish History in the Parsha. To get all the links to all the articles and books mentioned, be sure to subscribe to our weekly email through Substack, readingjewishhistoryintheparsha.substack.com. You can sign up there. Thank you again to our sponsors, Jana and Lior Hode and family, with immense gratitude to Hashem. Thank you so much for listening, and keep reading each and every Shabbos.